KSXARN, News West. We are a community organisation and we've been serving up the best amateur radio news in Australia since 1931.
Hi there, it's Clinton, VK6FCRC, and welcome to News West for the 7th of July, 2024. Now on with the show.
Did you know that many organisations have some form of statement about how their members ought to behave toward each other and in their dealings when acting on behalf of the organisation? These are typically called corporate ethics policies or code of conduct. Some other names exist, but these are the most common. I guess they are policies that we should not have to put down in writing, but unfortunately, we do. In amateur radio, we mostly enjoy civil relations with each other, albeit sometimes with some biting of our tongues. Then along come the socials, Facebook, etc. There are a couple of Facebook groups that are linked to amateur radio that, to be honest, are a complete disgrace. One is called Amateur Ham Radio Australia. It's a very large group, however, its main activity is criticising and lampooning others, especially anyone who says anything they construe as critical of the Wireless Institute, or even those who disagree with those who shout loudest and most often. The group membership is carefully curated by removing and banning those who express different opinions. This group is unhealthy and a very poor introduction to amateur radio in Australia. Some of the moderators of this group are well known in Australian amateur radio circles. In fact, one is a Wireless Institute of Australia director. Which brings me back to the start of this story. If you're a member, let alone in a leadership role of an organisation, where do you draw the line? When you hold a leadership role in an organisation, you're obliged to conform to a code of conduct and you can't simply turn this obligation on and off so that you can play up. Amateur radio used to be known as a gentleman's hobby, where respect was mutual and demonstrably so. And here we are now, in 2024, with loud public lack of respect. There are other Australian amateur radio Facebook groups where such behaviour is not tolerated. So seek those out and leave the other to wallow in the mire of their own creation. Meanwhile, organisations, and I place the Wireless Institute of Australia right at the front here, must publicly declare their codes of conduct and demand appropriate behaviour from those representing them. I'm Bob VK6POP.
WAG News for the 7th of July. Well, thank you very, very much to Anthony, VK6 Alpha X-Ray Bravo, and Colin, VK6 Alpha Charlie Tango. They put in Herculean effort with two extremely long days, backed up one day after the other. And then, in the middle of that, they turned up to a WAG meeting. Yes, on the Monday and the Tuesday of last week, they both put in extremely long days to settle the container, to get it as close to level as possible, and then to organise, to pack and unpack all of the WAG gear as it was moved from the Peter Hughes Scout Communications Centre in Hillview down to Mangidal. There were others who helped, but these two deserve the biggest pat on the back that we can do. So, virtual pat, guys. The July meeting happened last week. It did happen. It started a little late. There were no coffee mugs. Anyway, we survived July and we're looking forward to August. So, heads up, the meeting had a discussion. It was very close, but the next meeting of WAG will be at First Midland. We still haven't decided the long term, but August 5th, 7pm for a 7:30pm start at number 10, Helen Street in Bellevue. With the effort of the guys, and thank you to Trevor and to Dylan, and oh yeah, I was there, the container moving project is completed. This has been Mark, VK6X-Ray Lima Zulu, for WAG, VK6RRG. You're listening to News West, VK6ARN.
If you happen to listen to the right part of the 80-metre band on a Tuesday evening, you might hear something that sounds like this. The CQQRS net has been running every single Tuesday for the last 2 years and has been unbelievably popular. There are usually half a dozen, and a couple of times up to 18 stations, popping in and out, when they can, over the 4 or 5 hours. The aim is to encourage new CW operators to have a go at slow CW in a safe and really friendly environment, where slow speed and lots of mistakes are par for the course. It's all about having a go, starting with a basic call sign and RST exchange, then, over time, getting better and better. The net also attracts its fair share of old-timers, who enjoy helping others to have a go, or just to enjoy the banter. So this might be just the opportunity you've been waiting for to have a go at transmitting on CW, or perhaps just to stop the contacts rusting up on your key. Doesn't matter whether you're brand new to the code or if you're an old-timer who would like to have a bit of fun and help encourage new operators by having simple, safe QSOs at their speed, we'd love to have you join in. The net starts at 0900 Zulu every Tuesday on 80 metres between 3540 and 3570 kHz, and there's stations in the west, east and in between listening out for your CQQRS call. For more information and to receive our weekly CQQRS RagChew newsletter, contact me, Mark, VK6QI, via my email address on qrz.com, or you can email me direct, mark.bosma@icloud.com. That is mark.bosma@icloud.com. Too much switch mode power supply hash on 80 metres? This might be the incentive to do something about it. With a cheap noise canceller costing less than $100, 80 metres could be easier than you think. So once again, Tuesdays from 0900 Zulu until late, between 3540 kHz and 3570 kHz. Cheers from Mark, VK2KI and VK6QI.
You may notice that NewsWest has been light on for content lately, and I've been playing a lot of repeat stories, but you can help us to change that by sending your stories or contributions through to newswest@vk6.net.
Hi, just a little note about VK6RRG and the WAG Technical and General Net. Having it run every Sunday morning on VK6RLM, that's 146.750 or Channel 3 in the old money. And it starts at 10:30 a.m. this morning. Of course, if you're listening in the evening, it's next week.
Hi, I'm Bob VK6POP and I'm the Vice President of RASA, the Radio Amateur Society of Australia. RASA is a progressive society whose aim is to represent and promote the hobby of amateur radio in Australia. In the 6 years since RASA was formed, we've cemented our place in Australian amateur radio by providing effective representation to the ACMA and creating useful resources for amateurs. What makes RASA stand out from the others is that the resources we develop are given to amateurs freely with no requirement of membership or payment. The latest of these free resources, the Foundation Level Study Guide, was launched almost exactly 1 month ago, and downloads of the PDF version are approaching 500. This resource was developed by a team of experienced amateurs, most of whom are ACMA assessors or have relevant teaching or training experience. The study guide isn't just another book, it's online and interactive with live links to resources and purpose-made instructional videos. This RASA incentive is the first in Australia and it has attracted international attention. Complementing that study guide is the Welcome to Amateur Radio guidebook, which is another free resource from RASA. The guidebook contains useful information for amateurs, especially newcomers to the hobby. It contains hot links to further resources. The Welcome to Amateur Radio guidebook can be downloaded as a PDF file from the RASA website vkradioamateurs.org. RASA's QTC magazine was published last week. It's full of interesting stories and articles all about amateur radio. QTC is an online magazine available in Flip the Pages on the Screen, true online magazine format, and also as a PDF download. QTC also contains live links, and it's free for anyone, no membership required. These and all of the other RASA resources are available from our website, vkradioamateurs.org. That's vkradioamateurs.org.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6 ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
For Wiser News this 7th of July, I want to do two things. Heads up that there is a meeting tomorrow night, and go through the archive of the old VK6 WIA website. The following is from Jim Preston, VK6JP, back in September of 1999. And then I will return with some questions to think about and the details of tomorrow evening's meeting, hopefully to revive and probably refocus Wison in WA. So first up, the history files.
The following read comes from the archives of the VK6 WIA web pages. Have you ever thought, what does Wison do? Should I join them? Perhaps the following might help you to make a decision. Question: if someone called for help, would you be ready? On Sunday, 29 August 1999, Wison provided communications along the course for the City to Surf Fun Run. Operators taking part were Fred, VK6IE, Ron, VK6KRA, Peter, VK6JAE, Tony, VK6CV, Matthew, VK6KMS, Bruce, VK6CX, Jay, VK6YJS, Bob, VK6PO, and Jim, VK6JP. The event was in two parts. The 12-kilometre course started in the city in St George's Terrace, and the 4-kilometre course started at Perry Lakes. Both sub-events ended at City Beach Oval. There were about 6,800 starters for the long course and about 2,300 entrants for the short course. In addition, there were 19 wheelchair competitors. Timing this year was high-tech, with each entrant having a microchip attached to his or her shoelace. Timing devices at the start and finish recorded the elapsed time to 1/100th of a second. Communication for Wison was through the Wison repeater, which was situated near Wireless Hill in Ardross, and this gave satisfactory coverage of the course using standard mobile antennas on vehicles. Although signals were a little noisy at the City Beach end of the course. Operators were located at the start line for the 12K run at 4 kilometres, 6 kilometres and 8 kilometres, the start line for the 4 kilometre course at 9K, 10.5 kilometres and the finish line, and at the police mobile command post at City Beach. The police relied upon information passed by this last operator to coordinate the opening of barriers across side roads along the course. The start line for the 12 kilometre course, the operator was in a St John's ambulance vehicle and followed the end of the field. This arrangement was less than satisfactory in that the vehicle had a fiberglass roof, and the only steel surfaces were sloping at an angle of 45 degrees. The end result was a 5/8 vertical projecting forward at an angle of 45 degrees. Looked like a unicorn, according to Tony, VK6CV. The organisers had promised a different vehicle for next year. Total distance travelled by operators involved was 462 kilometres, and the total time was 32 man-hours. The following comments were written in the request of Ian Hunt, VK5QX, to assist him in making a submission to a Member of Parliament. It is not known whether any of the comments were actually used, as he had sought comments from various groups associated with the Wireless Institute of Australia. The first Wison operation that I experienced was a search for a Down syndrome youth of about 15 years who had strayed away from the group on an organised outing in a national park. It was almost dusk when we were called out, and by the time we had reached the search area, it was almost dark. A decision had been made to limit the number of vehicles travelling to the area, and this meant that my equipment and vehicle were left at search headquarters in the city. This was of no immediate concern, as the vehicle I travelled in was set up with a transceiver and mobile antenna. The area was outside the service area of the only available 2-metre repeater, and the distance and terrain was such that 2-metre simplex operation was not feasible. This meant that HF on 80 metres was used, and mobile vertical antennas were used at both ends of the circuit, and propagation conditions at the time meant that the two stations could not communicate. However, a station about 350 kilometres away could hear both stations loud and clear, and so was able to relay messages. A station about 100 kilometres away joined in and was able to share the load, until this operator had to go to work at about 2300. The search parties in the field used a radio operator with a 2-metre handheld who was able to communicate with the Forward Emergency Operating Centre, where a 2-metre base station was operated. The search was unsuccessful up to 0100, when it was decided to suspend the search until first light. At dawn, the search parties returned to the area, and with the lessons learned from the previous evening, a dipole was erected in the field and communication back to the city was maintained without any problem. The search concluded with the missing youth being found safe and well in a cave where he had spent the night.
Another search involved a missing schoolgirl who had not returned home after school. Weissen was not called out until 0500 hours the following morning, but communication was no problem because the search area was in the hills to the east of Perth with a line of sight to the search headquarters in the city. Consequently, 2-meter simplex provided excellent communication. However, the search did not end happily because the girl had been murdered and her body was found about 1300 hours. A further search involved a sister and brother of about 10 and 7 who had been on a picnic with their parents and who had gone exploring and were unable to find their way back to the spot that they had left. Weissen was called out at about 1800 hours and the area, while in hilly country, was within the service area of a 2-meter repeater. Communication with the repeater from the field was at times marginal, but always usable. This search was about to be abandoned for the night at about 0100 when a search vehicle using a loudspeaker to call the lost ones was successful in encouraging them to make their way to the track down which the vehicle was travelling, where they were picked up and returned to their grateful parents. With improvements in SES communications, demand for the services of Weissen has diminished, and we have been concerned with fun runs and car rallies rather than search and rescue. During a recent car rally, one of the vehicles rolled, and the co-driver sustained suspected spinal injuries. The Weissen operator nearest the scene was requested to walk the reported 200 metres to the crash site and assess the situation. The reported 200 metres turned out to be more like a kilometre, but the distance was covered in good time, and he was able to communicate with the nearest fixed portable station on 2 metres. The result was that an ambulance was moved onto the course, and the injured competitor transferred to hospital for assessment. It eventually turned out that the injury was severe whiplash, but of course it could have been more serious. Jim Preston, VK6JP, in November 1999. From another significantly historical document, we learned that Weissen WA maintained a list of amateur radio operators able to provide communication facilities in time of need. Bob, VK6PO, put out a request that read, Weissen WA is seeking names and call signs of licensed amateurs, metro or regional based, who are able to perform as part of a communications network that could be used in an emergency situation. You will need to have portable, mobile or base station equipment operational from power sources other than normal domestic power supply, and be able to operate for an indefinite period of time. Your equipment can be HF, VHF, UHF, or a combination of these. Please indicate your interest by contacting Jim, VK6JP, or Bob, VK6PO, and we will send you a form to complete which will outline your capabilities. You will not be requested to join Weissen, nor will there be any other activities other than your normal operating practices. This is simply a quick contact list of operators who can fulfill a need should the occasion arise. Great work done over many years. The lifetime interest in providing emergency communications preparedness and keeping themselves in practice for service of many hams, both still with us and many silent keys. In the 1980s and again in the 2000s, the direct focus of what Weissen did was changed as a response to changing situations and circumstances. Today, the need for a number of prepared radio hams able and willing to maintain the skills needed, God forbid they are ever called upon, in times of real emergency, remains. If we are there and we are ready or capable in short order to respond should ever the need arise, that's clearly a much better situation to be in than, oh, yeah, we remember when there was a number of hams who did that type of stuff. Shame, really. We should have had the foresight to keep on being prepared. Weissen needs a new generation of hams to get involved and to prepare themselves for the what if, the when the crap hits the fan. It's not trying to be dramatic, not trying to be anything really, just calmly saying, far better to be prepared than preparing to fail if and when the need actually arises. It's great if the need never does, but it's the what if, it's the when. Look, it has been for so many years a sport for some people to put down the efforts of Weissen as old and outdated by the new U-Butte systems, and there is no need for us to get involved, blah blah blah. I was sitting on a milk crate outside the first Wembley Downs Scout Hall in, oh, I don't know, about 2008 maybe? I was in an IRLP contact with a VK2. He had been one of those first hams who spoke to a VK8 able to put up an antenna and use batteries or a generator on the morning of December 25th, 1974. Sure, it wasn't a surprise that Darwin had suffered damage when a known cyclone hit town and everything went dark. Darwin was obviously hit and the power was gone. The authorities didn't need ham radio to tell them that, but it was hams who got on the air and raised the fact of life in Darwin, a hope of information in the first instance. Every now and again we hear of some ham somewhere being on air and hearing emergency traffic, sometimes even from other hams, on the likes of Travellers Nets, etc. One could be funny and invoke the memory of the radio ham. This is GLK London calling. Yes, it is R not raining here also. But seriously, the need to know how to handle traffic remains, even if the naysayers call us Dad's Army. So, Mr. Mannering, sir, don't panic. There is a meeting tomorrow night at the First Midland Scout Hall, number 10, Helen Street in Bellevue. Doors are going to open around 6:30 p.m. for a 7:30 beginning to proceedings. Half an hour of milling around and organising for the 7:30 AGM. There is a prepared agenda, and it has been circulated around a little bit on the socials. The main questions for the night are where to focus the efforts of Wison for the rest of the 2020s and moving forward. We have climate change. We have a prediction of ever more strong and frequent extreme weather events. Ladies and gentlemen, hams all. Let us never have to ask the question in hindsight, why did we stop having a Wison in WA? This is a call to arms, a plea for you to come along tomorrow night and discuss the future direction of Wison WA. I know that Jim would want Wison to continue in some aspect, even if only as a training and coordination body. There are skills that we can embody and pass on to the wider ham community of service to community, of training in preparedness and skills for wider ham hobby use, not just in emergencies. Please come to the meeting 7 p.m. tomorrow night, 10 Helen Street, Bellevue. For Wison WA, I'm Mark, VK6 X-ray Lima Zulu.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6 ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
Time is passing quickly, and as the sun doesn't stop rising and setting, it's time to dust off your calendars. Grab a permanent marker and write it in. The NCRG Ham Fest is on again come August 25th, 2024. You won't be surprised to find the event at the Cyril Jackson Rec Centre at the end of Fisher Street in Bassendean. What else do we love about Hamfest? The raffle. This year the raffle will have four prizes. An Andrews Communication voucher worth $2,000. A Yaesu FTM 300, $699. A Yaesu FT70DR worth $299. And if Yaesu isn't your brand, there's a $100 voucher from Horizon Antennas. Tickets are $5 per entry, available for sale across New South Wales, the NT, Queensland, South Australia, Tasmania, Victoria, and of course, Western Australia. You'll have to wait another month or two for the raffle start date of the 25th of June, with the raffle ending at 12 noon on the 25th of August at the NCRG Hamfest. Start saving, with full details appearing on the NCRG website before the raffle starts. I'm Glyn, Victor Kilo 6, Papa Alpha Whiskey, for the Northern Corridor Radio Group. 7-3.
Hi, it's Clinton, VK6FCRC with you. You may have noticed that last week we missed the reminder for the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia. This was due to a Windows update, as I was saving the file where I lost everything, and because I was flat out with rent inspection, so I didn't have a chance to go back and fix everything. Even though I tried recreated the News West file, after having to download and recreate everything, there just wasn't the time. But I managed to upload a copy of the file to YouTube after the broadcast, and that was on YouTube last week. So, yeah, that's what's missing.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. Over the past week, I've been attempting to work out what the IARU, the International Amateur Radio Union, actually does and how it works. I started looking into this because the IARU is this year celebrating a century since its foundation in 1925. You might think of the IARU as one organisation, but behind the scenes there are actually four, one for each so-called region, as well as a global organisation called the International Secretariat, headquartered at the ARRL in Connecticut. The regions have been negotiated by members of the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union. As early as 1927, the ITU documented differences in frequency allocations between Europe and other regions. In Cairo in 1938, it defined boundaries for Europe. In Atlantic City in 1947, the ITU defined three regions with specific boundaries, essentially Europe and Africa, the Americas, and the rest of the world. As a surprise to nobody, this is purely a political decision, especially since radio waves don't get to have a passport and pass border control. The impact of this continues today, generations later. We still have this patchwork of frequency allocations, we still have exclusions, different band edges, and other anachronisms. The regions are further divided into zones. When you start looking at the ITU zone map in detail, it gets weird. For example, Iraq is in Region 1. neighbouring Iran has been specifically excluded from Region 1 and moved to Region 3. In case you're curious, Iran has been represented at the ITU since 1938. Antarctica is part of 7 of the 90 ITU zones and all 3 regions, because of course it is. Zone 90, jammed between zones 35, 45, 61, 64, 65 and 76, almost as an afterthought, contains one landmass, Minamitorishima, an island that sticks 9 meters above the water, has a 6 kilometer coastline, and is generally off limits to the general public. The nearest land in any direction is over 1,000 kilometers away. It's got an IOTA, Islands on the Air, designation Oscar Charlie 073, and despite its isolation, has been activated by radio amateurs using Juliet Delta 1 prefix call signs. I live in Australia, ITU Zone 58, part of Region 3, together with the 2 most populous countries on the planet, India and China, and the rest of Eastern Asia, but not the former Soviet republics, and most but not all of Oceania. You know, because logic. From a population perspective, Region 3 is the largest by several orders of magnitude, but you'd never know it if you weren't looking. Why am I telling you all this? Well, that's the international stage on which the IARU is representing amateur radio. In 1927, the underlying assumption was that each service, amateur radio included, had a global exclusive allocation. The reality was different. Spectrum was in such short supply that individual exceptions were carved out, which, as I've said, resulted in splitting up the world into regions, starting in 1938 and codified in 1947. The IARU in 1925 is a different organisation from what it is today. In 1925, individual amateurs could become members. As soon as enough members from a country joined, they'd be grouped together. When there were enough groups, the IARU became a federation of national associations. Over time, the IARU as a single body evolved into the structure we have today. In 1950 in Paris, the IARU Region 1 organization was formed. In 1964, in Mexico City, IARU Region 2 was created, and in 1968, in Sydney, IARU Region 3 came to exist. You can see their online presence at the various IARU.org websites. How it works is no clearer now than it was when I started. What it has achieved is equally unclear. I'm currently trolling through ITU World Radio Communications conference documentation going back to 1903 to discover references to amateur radio, but it's hard going. At least it's something. The IARU documentation is not nearly as extensive or up to date. It appears that many, if not all, of the people working behind the scenes at the various IARU organizations are volunteers. If you feel inclined, there's an ongoing request for assistance. And before you ask, yes, I looked into helping out, but that will have to wait until funds permit. If you have insights into the functioning of the IARU, don't be shy. Get in touch. CQ@vk6flab.com is my address. I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima Alpha Bravo.
Hi there, it's Clinton, VK6FCRC, back with you. And did you know that NewsWest is now on YouTube? Type in youtube.com/@NewsWest weekly podcast -Kilo Zulu 7 Yankee Charlie. Oh, and before I go, I'd like to thank those watching on YouTube or ATV, the readers, and you for listening. I'd also like to thank our team, the broadcasters, and those submitting content each week. Please stand by now for callbacks after the broadcast, or head over to the VK6.net website and fill out the form so we know how many people are listening each week.